Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is the Shame-Free Zone, and I'm Veronica Monet, and I'm back. It's great to be back. I was on tour in Oregon, had a wonderful, wonderful time there, did a couple of sold-out presentations at Club Sesso and a couple of sessions at Oregon State University as well. All in all, I think I'm probably going to be traveling up to Oregon a little more often. It was a very warm welcome. Anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about, a book called Pelicans, Coconuts, and Butterflies, Conquering Cancer with a Life of Soul. The author is Annie Caspar, and she has so graciously stayed up late. She's actually in Puerto Rico. And Annie is an advocate of non-invasive alternative cures for cancer. She's a humanitarian, and she's actually started quite a few different organizations and methodologies for health. I'm going to let her tell you about it mostly, but she's got something called Compassionate Cure for Cancer, a self-exploration method called Intuitive Sovereignty. And Annie, I'm very happy to have you here in the Shame-Free Zone tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Veronica, thank you so much for inviting me.
I started a little bit of a conversation on Facebook tonight. We'll get into that in a little bit. But one of the things that I was asking people is whether or not the medical profession is turning women's bodies into an industry. And I know that you and I are going to be approaching that. But before we get into the meat of this conversation, maybe you could tell our listeners a little more about yourself. I'm wondering, had you always been on this path before you yourself were diagnosed with cancer, or is this something that grew out of that personal challenge?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had always been what I would call a natural woman, which means, you know, if I came down with colds or any other kind of, you know, light illness of any sort, I always tried to take care of it either herbally or homeopathically, et cetera, over the years. And later, after many years of working on Wall Street, I actually had been diagnosed with chronic fatigue, which I believe at this juncture was just adrenal exhaustion. And I again approached it from a natural level, and within about 3 years, after becoming, in essence, a raw vegan and going through pretty massive detoxification, I essentially cured myself. So when I was diagnosed with cancer, needless to say, I was rather shocked because I had really been really pristinely clean in terms of eating and lifestyle for quite some time. And I was quite angry, actually, because I couldn't believe that I actually was diagnosed with breast cancer. I had literally no risk factors that I could determine, and I was extremely upset because I had spent a long time really taking care of myself extremely well for, you know, the 8 years prior. So, no, I hadn't really focused in on the whole kind of, like, you know, medical, what I call the medical mayhem paradigm, or what literally appears to me to be a modern assault on the female body until the diagnosis of cancer.
Wow. So that's, oh, God, I don't know how other people are listening to this, but I was like, oh, my God, you were a raw vegan and you wound up with cancer. How does that happen? Do you have
some answers?
You know, a line of thought around that now? Do you think it's the environment or?
Well, I think it's a variety of things, Veronica. I think, first of all, yes, indeed. There's no question. I mean, we have, I say we, but at the, you know, the nest is soiled. There's just no question. Between the 90,000 different chemicals that have been liberated into our environment in the past 50 years alone, the 400,000 Hiroshima bombs worth of radiation that have been liberated into our atmosphere since the early 1990s, you know, the types of hormones that women have been taking since the 1970s, it's almost impossible not to encounter some level of what I would call abnormal cell growth. And all you have to do is have the combination of the environmental toxicity along with some, let's say, some excessive stressors for a year, and let's say a history of this, as my oncologist told me.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? A history of what?
Of these three things. She said to me, she said, forget the environmental toxicity. Forget the stressful event prior. These are the three major risk factors that you had. One, you took birth control pills in your 20s for about 3 years. Two, you didn't bear children. Three, you took a bioidentical hormone replacement therapy for 3 years.
I see.
So, two of the things that I did, which were sanctioned by the Food and Drug Administration, the government of the United States, led to me having breast cancer. She said yes.
My God. I was on the pill for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. 3 years, she considers that a risk factor.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's a risk factor, just having been on the pill at all.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Okay, and then, of course, you have to add the fact, even if you're not taking birth control pills, if you're drinking tap water, a lot of times you are on everybody else's birth control pills and antidepressants, whether you want to be or not.
Oh, gosh. Oh, what a wild, wild world.
Oh, it's getting pretty tough out there. It really is, as far as trying to avoid toxins and genetically modified foods and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how, so you've already are on this path of health for 8 years, then you get diagnosed with breast cancer. Did you believe it? I mean, do you really believe that you had cancer, or do you think we're over-diagnosing women?
Well, unfortunately, I would love to say in my case that it was an over-diagnosis, but there were about 14 spots, and there was an 11-centimeter cloud. It was pretty ugly. And I had to move pretty promptly. But I do believe that we are overdiagnosing women. I believe these episodes of diagnosing breast cancer when it's it's pre-cancer is absolutely absurd. I believe in recommending that women have mammograms every single year from the age of 40 on. I mean, let's be real, mammograms are radiation. Hello, radiation. Introduces cellular change, particularly DNA breakage. It's a wild world.
I stopped doing mammograms. I did one, and I felt like they so mutilate the breast when they're trying to get it in that machine.
Of course, and so you're traumatizing tissue, not only from radiation, but from squeezing it beyond, you know, at least beyond what I could bear. I remember the first time I was asked to do a mammogram, and they showed me what was going to be done, and I literally turned. I can't believe I said this to the technician, but I said, you know, when men put their penis here or their testicles here, I'll do this. But until then, I'm not doing this. Thank
right
you.
On.
Goodbye. And that was the end of that. And, you know, we have incredible diagnostic technology like thermography that the conventional medical community refuses to completely acknowledge as accurate, even more accurate than mammography is. And, you know, the recent FDA recommendation, FYI, is to double dosage the radiation now so that you can do 3D dimensional breast scanning with double dosing or triple dosing of radiation on the breast.
I just, you know, I'm afraid to actually get on a plane now because, you know.
That's a whole other conversation. We'll save that for another interview.
I know. It's like they really want us to have cancer, and why wouldn't they? Because, you know, they're going to make money off of it. But
now I'm going to say, you know, something that a lot of people won't want to hear, but, you know, quite frankly, yes. Capitalism appears to be structured in such a perverse way that it literally feeds off of its customer.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. You know, the medical profession is such an enormous, enormous, enormous industry that it couldn't bear the thought even of a cure of cancer. Leave alone less invasive treatment models or less invasive diagnostic models. But, you know, the good news is that the baby boomers, the most productive generation,
Annie, I'm just stopping. Are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm not.
Okay. All right. We had a moment there where I guess we're having a little trouble talking between Puerto Rico and the U.S., so I'm going to ask you to repeat that. You said something about the baby boomers. Can you repeat that?
Oh, yes. It's my personal belief that the baby boomers, the most productive, creative, amazing generation in the history of the planet, I personally believe, you know, they've moved through every paradigm they've moved through. They've changed for the better, Veronica. And I think as they move into their 50s and 60s, they're just going to say, no, I'm sorry, please, talk to the hand about chemotherapy. Talk to the hand about radiation. I know you can do better because guess what? I've done better for my whole life, so please give it to me. And they are going to ultimately demand less invasive. They already are. They're walking away. I mean, the entire alternative medical movement is just booming, absolutely booming, because nobody wants to go through, you know, a stint at Auschwitz.
Yeah. Well, I seriously.
Well, I mean, it's what it is.
Well, a lot of people are still very afraid that, you know, when their doctor tells them that they really need to pursue a certain course of action, they're, you know, it's very difficult to fly in the face of that. So tell us, I mean, your story is obviously a very inspiring one. Now, you've been in, I don't know if you want to call that remission, but 5 years now.
Yes, it's actually over 5 years, and it's technically not remission because I technically still do have like a manifestation, but the final remaining tumors, I got rid of basically 12 tumors, and I got rid of the 11-centimeter cloud, but the final remaining tumors have shrunken by 40%, and they are, in essence, indolent. My markers are totally normal. My PET scans come in at benign, so it's all good. But I was very lucky, Veronica, in that I did biopsy, and I did determine that I had a very low-grade, slow-growing cancer, which is a lot easier to manage with diet and lifestyle changes. Unfortunately, if you have an aggressive cancer, you've got to know that, and you may need to address it with chemo, I have to say, because chemo does actually work really amazingly well against an aggressive cancer. And yes, aggressive, highly malignant cancers, they will kill you. But guess what? Not every cancer is that.
And you had the most prevalent breast cancer in the world today, which was intraductal carcinoma, correct?
Yes, exactly, exactly. Okay. 80% of breast cancers are exactly that, but they're all variations on the theme of. They go from, you know, the most slow-growing to the most aggressive. They're just basically within the ductal family. But you have to know whatever type of cancer you might be diagnosed with, you have to know what cellular type it is. And once you know what cellular type it is, then you can pick the best modalities, whether they be conventional, they be alternative, or a combination therein.
Okay. Well, tell us about your personal journey.
Well, my personal journey was one in which I realized that, you know, it's not all about the body. That, of course, was a significant part of it. But I had been cleansing for so long, it could not possibly be all about the body. And I knew, of course, there were environmental toxins, and I knew that there were also stressors that had led to this. But I also knew that I had to do basically a complete detoxification across the board, emotional, spiritual, as well as physical. And that's what Pelicans, Coconuts, and Butterflies takes you through. It takes you through a very, very, very deep and intensive journey back to your authentic self, to your soul, to truly who you are, to your greatest grace, to what makes you, you know, just wake up in great joy every single day. And that's quite the journey, because I spent a good part of my life, like most of us do, basically trying to live the, like, fantastic, fabulous, fame, you know, blah, blah life. And it wasn't necessarily the most authentic life for me, and it wasn't the truth of my soul.
Well, let's dive into that, because that's a big topic. You know, I think when people are thinking about health, they're mostly thinking about what I eat, how much rest I get, maybe exercise, but diet and exercise become the big parts. But you're actually talking about kind of a more metaphysical level here, mm-hmm. when you start talking about your, you know, mental and spiritual state of mind,
mm-hmm.
Or state of being. Mm-hmm. So what was it that you discovered about yourself that let you know you were maybe not quite on target there?
Well, I discovered, in essence, I was living someone else's life. Although I had attempted many years prior to leave the wild Manhattan Wall Street life behind, and I was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the time when I was diagnosed, I still was not living the life I truly wanted to live, and I was not truly expressing who I was and on my deepest, deepest level. And that took a lot of unpeeling of the onion. It doesn't happen instantly. I mean, it takes time to really, truly come to deeply know yourself and know the resonance of the truth of it when you get there. And, you know, I explored much more intensive meditation. I explored a lot of different masters through reading. And I explored nature enormously. I spent an enormous amount of time in nature reconnecting with that which is the most authentic, the great, great Gaia, who, you know, she's always true to herself in every way. And I also had to come very, very, very deeply into what I would call my deepest kind of feminine self, because, of course, when you're dealing with a feminine Cancer, you know, you have to deal with the wounded feminine. And coming to my deepest feminine self, I realized very deeply that I had abandoned myself a long time ago by becoming this madly successful Wall Street woman and making gazillions of dollars and helping women basically reclaim their rights on Wall Street, their civil rights on Wall Street, and their employment rights on Wall Street. And I realized that the warrioress was killing me, and that it was time to really be the easy-breezy cover girl. And thus, Puerto Rico and Puerto del Sol and the ocean and the Caribbean life. But that took some time.
I would imagine. What do you mean, easy breezy cover girl?
I mean, I'm basically, as I say in the book, I'm an A-plus recovering personality. So that means trying to keep myself at a B-plus, truly, just to be able to move with the flow of life as opposed to constantly control and create, which is actually, in essence,
That was very important. Let's repeat that. So you're... Okay, I get it. Moving from Wall Street to the islands, but the way you just put that was beautiful. So you're moving from controlling,
controlling and creating. And there's nothing wrong with being creative as long as you're creating literally in flow, which is very different than heavy duty, intensive, focused creation.
Okay.
that drive, that kind of masculine Western, you know, culture drive, go, 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 go until you break your neck.
Yes.
Well, that's exactly what happens. You go, 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 go until you break your neck.
Okay.
And that's not healthy. You're out of balance. But if you live much more in balance, like many of the Eastern cultures do, then you move with flow, meaning you focus on your objectives, you go in to create, but you don't try to control everything, and you allow things to come into being on their own. And ultimately, that's when you reach your greatest divinity, because you realize you don't have to do it all. You've never had to do it all on your own. Always the divine has been there with you. Source has always been there with you. And if you simply have faith, you will move in grace. And that is an easy breezy cover girl life.
Okay. Well, it certainly sounds blessed.
It is.
So let's talk about some specifics about this journey of yours. You get diagnosed. You're already on a path of health. You decide, I'm not going to do chemo.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next step after that? Do you start trying to look at, a macrobiotic diet? Or was there some stumbling here? Or did you immediately say, oh, I need to have a better spiritual practice? What was that like for you?
Well, the first thing I did is I realized and grokked very immediately and accepted the fact that, wait, you have 14 spots and 2 breasts and 11-centimeter clout. This is not funny. This is serious. And you need to act really immediately and fast and hit it hard. So I immediately did very extensive research, and I found the treatment protocol of Joseph Issels. And I immediately went to Santa Barbara, California, and actually worked with his son, Christian Issels. And that treatment protocol, which is based on very high doses of vitamin C, as well as detoxification, far infrared sauna, colonics, and alkalization of the body, but deep alkalization and fast, not just from green leafy vegetables and wheatgrass. That, within 1 month's time, deleted 12 spots and removed the 11
centimeter clout. In one month's time, you got rid of 12 spots by going on a fast and a detox.
Not a fast. This is literally IV therapy. This is intravenous, high doses of vitamin C, minerals, Bs, cesium, as well as myriad other pieces to the protocol. Detailed protocol that works amazingly effectively, and I would strongly recommend anyone who's diagnosed with cancer look into the Joseph Issels protocol. And that was extremely successful. And then after that, I made an error. Being the A-plus personality that I was, I still had 2 little tumors left, and I mean little. They were basically about a centimeter. I mean, it was quite the joke at that juncture. But the oncologists were demanding I do chemotherapy. So I tried to straddle, and instead of doing chemotherapy, I found insulin potentiation treatment, which I researched rather extensively, and I realized, okay, this could potentially really work. You take about 10 to 15% of the chemotherapeutic protocol,
uh-huh,
and you do it with, you use sugar and glucose. You're manipulating your glucose so that the cancer cells open and accept the chemotherapy much more quickly. And purportedly, it's supposed to save you the side effects. No, not for me. Hair loss, complete disaster, tumors doubled in size, and I almost died of septicemia.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So, moral of the story is, chemotherapy really is that bad, and you have to be working with an incredible oncologist who can take you through that amazing sea of chemicals. So
Wow. That
was a bit of a step back, yes, exactly. But after that, I just went back to intensive vitamin C IVs, my raw foods diet, heavy duty detoxification with far infrared saunas, colonics, as well as a lot of exercise, and started making my journey home. And in essence, that's basically what it's been throughout this 5-year period. It's a cycling of intensive cleansing, intensive nutrient replenishment, continued commitment to an anti-cancer diet that is still 70% raw with about 30% cooked, and of course a deep commitment to knowing myself well emotionally, expressing my emotions as immediately as I possibly can, not stuffing them in any way, shape, or form, removing from my life emotionally toxic individuals and or, you know, organizations, and having a deep spiritual practice.
What is your deep spiritual practice?
Well, for me, you know, Veronica, as a woman, for me, being in nature is one of my deepest spiritual practices. And secondarily, actually, I would say tantric sex is critically important as well, because I have found in tantric sex that you are literally making love in the universe. And when you are making love in the universe, you are so deeply connected with the divine that... And I can't think of a better way, actually, to connect with the divine. So the combination of really connecting with nature and literally watching and experiencing her grace is just an amazing, amazing thing for me. You know, the whole meditative tradition was originated by men, so it's a very isolationist kind of tradition. Go within, get to the Om. Well, you know, that's not what women are about. We're all expression. We're all feeling. We're all, you know, movement. We're all, like, you know, we're everything from the most, you know, gentle dove to the great Kali. So for us to stand in a still place, as David Deida would love, and, you know, meditate all day and Om all day, okay, but doesn't go too far for me, actually.
Do you have a by the way, I've been falling away from my meditative practice, so there's something that's not working for me either. Tell me, you had a meditation before the cancer. What was that, you know, chanting and sitting? Or
it was chanting and sitting, but what I discovered after the diagnosis of cancer is that chanting and sitting was not truly authentic to me. And I was
right.
Even though I was there, I was working too hard. But what's authentic to me, for example, is walking down the beach and really stilling my mind and simply experiencing and being very, very, very alive in the moment, watching the crabs eat, watching the waves come in and out, listening to them, smelling them, you know, feeling the sand under my feet, caressing my feet, picking up shells and just feeling the texture of them, listening to them and playing with sea glass. That, to me, is the most amazing meditation I could ever think of.
I was at a workshop recently, and one of the things they were talking about was the vibration that nature has. And if you think about it like a tuning fork, you know, you start one tuning fork to vibrating, and it will vibrate the other tuning fork. The analogy was, you know, that when you walk in nature, the vibration of the trees, the plants, and the animals actually have an effect on you, so that you start vibrating at that frequency.
Yeah.
So if it, you know, that whole thing about it's not. I used to think of it as a psychological process. It's like, well, I'm calming down because I'm not listening to sirens or traffic. But I think there is actually another component to that too, which is you know, the vibration that you're sinking into there.
There's no question. I agree. I really do agree, Veronica. And also, it actually was proven when Darwin was proving his mayhem theory, which is actually inaccurate. It's not survival of the fittest. It's survival of that which fits. In essence, there was another there was another scientist out of Australia who was doing the same type of work that Darwin was doing at the same time, and he came up with a completely conflicting conclusion, which was, no, it is not survival of the fittest. It is survival of who fits, because every single living being is completely interdependent with another. And so you're absolutely right. When you are in the vibration of nature, you're never actually out of it, but the truth of the matter is living beings have the same vibrational frequency on many, many different levels. They may be a little bit off, but there's a huge difference between the vibrational frequency of a chair and the vibrational frequency of a plant. Mm. I mean, monumental. So, but the critical thing, I think, is that you fit in nature. That's where you belong. That's who you are. That's your genesis. You come from the seed.
Mm.
And you have spent your whole evolutionary period in nature until, in essence, quite frankly, the past 100 years. And look at what's happened in the past 100 years. 100 years ago, the cancer rate was 3% in America. The cancer rate today is reportedly something like 40% of Americans will encounter some level of cancer in their lifetime. That's insanity.
Now, some people would probably say the reason that there are more people being diagnosed with cancer is because we're catching it. We're catching it and we're saving those lives. What do you say about that?
I doubt it. I really, really, really doubt it. I mean, really, if 40% of the people 100 years ago were coming up with cancer, you would have a lot less population.
Right.
They like to create a lot of a lot of fiction. You know, the early diagnosis. The early diagnosis argument is a double-edged sword. One, yes, great. Early diagnosis is fantastic, especially if you get to intervene with changes in diet and lifestyle. Because if you catch cancer really early and it's non-aggressive, I have to say it's not so difficult to take care of. I know people are going to be like, "What?" But seriously, it's an imbalance of the body. And so I respect early detection, but I'm not going to say, and I don't believe in any way, shape, or form, that the reason we have so much cancer in our world today is because we're detecting it earlier. I believe the reason we have so much cancer in our world today is because we have severely polluted the nest. And it's not just cancer. We have the highest incidence of degenerative diseases that we've had in the history of mankind, and we shouldn't have them. Victoria, we have the greatest medical technology, the greatest science. We should be living to 200.
Wow.
Seriously.
So let's go back to your journey again. So you start spending more time in nature. Was it difficult? I mean, for a lot of people, it's like, well, they would have a job like you did.
Mm-hmm.
How could you possibly walk away from that? Did you feel that your life was, you know, that threatened? Were you afraid? Did it make it easy to walk away, or was this a difficult thing?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, Victoria. When you're facing your mortality, you change things. Luckily, I had started my own business, Body by Bliss, already, so I wasn't beholden to a corporation or to an employer. I was beholden to myself.
Right.
So that made it a lot easier for me. But two, living in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the time, it was very easy to re-merge with nature because she was just so fantastically and stunningly beautiful there. What I found was difficult was deeply merging with her. That took time. And deeply merging is not just being there, but is actually going up into the mountains, doing the hike, and actually being able to sit in a meadow still and listen to her and feel her and literally connect with her in all of her magnificence. That takes time, and that's another form of meditation, as just like walking on the beaches. That takes time because you really do have to release yourself and really, really solve your preconceived notions of, like, what you should be doing, who you should be, where you should be, and how this is supposed to be. And it's really the residence of the residence in the now. And that takes time for anyone.
So, I know I'm jumping around here a little bit, but I want to go back a little bit to Joseph Issels. Apparently there was some controversy about his methodology, and he actually was charged with manslaughter. But
no,
eventually...
they all are, love. They all are. But, you know, you do know today that the third leading cause of death in our conventional medical paradigm is the doctors themselves. You know, every alternative physician gets attacked, period, end of story. Most of them have their lives destroyed. William Kelly has 30,000 successful cases of remission and or cure, mostly of pancreatic cancer, because he cured his own. And the man was driven to absolute insanity by the FDA and other regulatory agencies in the United States. Joseph Issels as well. It's the same with, I'm trying to think of who else was, Brzezinski. Oh, my God, Brzezinski. Brzezinski was persecuted and basically brought in for grand jury indictment something like 8 times by the FDA, and they never found anything. So it's standard when you start looking at alternative medicine that everyone since the turn of the century or since about the 1800s, from homeopaths to chiropractors across the board, have been attacked and almost completely decimated by, quote-unquote, the AMA and that wonderful, huge, you know, medical industry. It's standard. And yes, he's going to be a controversial figure because he was willing to take on 4-stage patients. No one does. And if you have a success record of like 80% cure, you're definitely going to run up against serious opposition because there's far too much money being made on cancer.
Well, and let's talk about that, okay? That's a great way for us to segue into this conversation. I'm actually going to read a few comments from Facebook here. The question that I put out was, is the medical profession turning women's bodies into an industry? And I asked people to think about things like birth, breast cancer, breast exams, birth control. Here are some of the comments that came in. John said that, you know, they are definitely about the money. That's what all Western medicine is about. Michael said billions are spent to find a cure, quote-unquote, for cancer, something that would benefit the cancer industry as well as the pharmaceutical industry. If even 10% of this had gone toward finding the cause of the current breast cancer epidemic, we'd be a lot further along in solving the problem. And then John said, well, there are already many natural cures for breast cancer and all of the other diseases out there. Hokie said, it's all about the money. And he said, think in terms of how many of what you mentioned can be circumvented by healthy living and alternative procedures. He's honestly felt for a long time that doctors have taken advantage of women for various reasons. Money, to secure a male-dominated society for the two highest. You could probably trace this all the way back to when men figured out their contribution to the reproductive process. And then Nicholas says, I wasn't shocked to hear the recent reversal of opinion on removing lymph nodes and the revelation that it didn't do much good for women diagnosed with breast cancer. What do you think about that? Do you think that they need to be removing the lymph nodes?
Oh God, no! Your lymph nodes are responsible. They are a part of your immune system. They are a part of your detoxification system. That's the last thing you need. And they're doing their job if cancer cells are in there. Hello. I mean, it's absurd. And yes, I have to agree. I believe the entire medical paradigm in the Western world has been structured basically for profiteering. I'm sorry to say, truly, because the truth of the matter is there have been natural cures for almost every single disease out there today for at least that we know of. Let's see. The oldest medicinal system is the Chinese medicine system and potentially also Ayurvedic. So we're talking about, what, 8,000 years?
Right.
And it's all natural. So what's the problem? And why? Why can't you utilize that? Oh, because you can't patent it. And if you can't patent it, you can't mark it up 5,000%. And then, on top of that, you don't get to cut somebody up, which is a huge, you know, wonderful experience for you and and the person. And you make, you know, and you make anywhere between $25,000 and $250,000 per operation.
Oh.
I mean, it's absurd. The cost of a cancer patient is $1.2 million in their lifetime. That's how much the medical industry makes on a cancer patient. That's a lot of money. So, of course, who's going to cure cancer?
Wow.
Especially.
Those are shocking figures. Just to play devil's advocate here, you've still got a couple of spots on your breast, right?
I have two indolent tumors, yes.
Okay, and what is an indolent tumor?
Indolent means stabilized, doing nothing, and in fact, in this case, shrinking by 40%.
Is it still shrinking?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. If you went to a Western doctor right now, how would he feel about that? Would he feel that you're taking an unnecessary risk?
I just went to a Western oncologist about 2 months ago, and she said to me, I'm not concerned about the cancer. I'm concerned about the scar tissue from the retraction of the cancer.
She's concerned about the scar tissue. What concern would that cause?
Well, it's because if you have changes in the breast, then, you know, you have to do something about it because you do have changes in the breast. When anything heals, things change. It doesn't
Are you concerned about the scar tissue?
No, I'm not concerned about very much. I've lived 6 years, and quite frankly, I'm a bit more concerned about the state of the world than I am about my right breast.
Okay. Well, okay. So the doctors, you know, oftentimes tend to be very... I think they're worried a lot of times about malpractice suits. Do you think that has anything to do with this? Is it like they always are erring on, oh, let's just cut it off because it could be cancer?
Really, Veronica, I'd love to say that that's the truth. But I'll tell you what, this summer I visited Asia and I spent some time in Thailand and Malaysia and a few other places. And I did actually visit medical professionals there. And quite frankly, their approach is completely different. And it's the same also in Puerto Rico. Their approach is, okay, you have to live. I am not going to do something that's going to make it impossible for you to live with yourself. So I want to work with you, and I'm going to look at your cancer as carefully as I can, and I'm going to find a way to do this in a way that's going to work for you. Because I know that if you are going against me while I go through this process, I will lose you as a patient. And that's truly the way they see it. That is not the way it is seen in the United States. In the United States, it is my way or the highway. You don't do it my way, you're fired. Annie Caspar, you need to have both breasts taken off, all female organs taken out, and reconstruction after chemotherapy and radiation. Sorry, end of story.
And this is what they told you then?
Yes, that was three individual consultations. And I just said, sorry, no can do. We'll have to just die, I guess.
Wow.
Well, because it's absurd. I couldn't even believe they actually believe that this is the way. Do you know where cancer surgery began? It began with a mentally deranged surgeon from the Deep South who was performing gynecological operations on black women and was recruited to Sloan Kettering, the greatest cancer hospital in the world, by the Carnegie family and made the head of surgery for cancer. That's the origins of surgery for cancer.
Wow.
And you do know the origins of chemotherapy. The origins
no,
of chemotherapy.
No, I don't.
Is very simple. After World War I, they had far too much mustard gas left over. They had far too many biologically poisonous chemicals left over. And they said, why are we trying this on the cancer patients? They are cytotoxic drugs. They bring the body to the edge of death. You are lucky to make it back. Many
well, I knew
do not.
That.
Yeah.
But
many
I didn't know it
not.
Came out of war.
Yes, indeed. And worldwide, 7% of cancer patients survive 5 years or longer pursuing conventional therapy.
That's the hell of it. That's right there. It's like they buy you 2 or 3 years, and then, you know, you're done for anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at Elizabeth Edwards.
Yeah.
Look at her.
Yeah, true.
You know, I mean, look at Patrick Swayze. I mean, Michael Douglas, God bless him right now. He's, you know, but his mouth is wrecked. Who knows how long it's going to take for him to completely come back. And God bless it doesn't come back. Look
so
at Farrah Fawcett.
You think 10 years from now we're going to be looking at, or, okay, maybe 20, we'll be looking at the current treatment of cancer, kind of akin to, you know, bloodletting from the...
I'm hoping it's within 5 years, love, because people, they've changed a lot just in the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed enormously in the past 5 years because more and more patients are coming in, like myself, and saying, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I can't believe you can look me in the eye or not look me in the eye and make a recommendation that is tantamount to torture. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, well, especially when it comes to female cancers, they have no issue cutting everything out and just nuking everything. It's absurd.
This attack on the female body is it's entrenched in the culture. Here's a comment from my friend Bianca, who just had a beautiful baby girl, and this is what she had to say. As a very new mother, I'd like to add that pregnancy is not an ailment. I was not sick with child. I feel like pregnancy is another means by which doctors attempt to exploit the female body for profit. Pregnancy is a normal, natural, physiological process that we're perfectly capable of doing without so many interventions. Did you know that some hospitals actually pay doctors based on the procedures they perform? Mm-hmm. And guess what procedure OBGYNs are paid most for? C-section.
Of course.
I was primed starting at 36 weeks for a monster baby and told that my pelvic bone was okay but not good for vaginal delivery. I was also given the option of a practically parking lot epidural and almost forced into an induction because I went to 41 weeks and one day. My beautiful, nearly 8-pound baby girl was born on February 10th without drugs of any kind. She wasn't a monster, and my hips are apparently adequate. Surprise, surprise.
Well, you know, the whole domination of the female body by the male-dominated medical industry is quite absurd. I mean, truly, how can, first of all, 99.9% of research studies done on the human body are done on male bodies.
Right.
So
we have very little
so how
to
can
go
you
on
even
as
speak
far
with,
as...
How can you even speak with authority about the way a woman should have her child? How can you even speak with authority about a woman's breasts? Or her uterus, or her ovaries. You don't have any research that even tells you anything truly about her. A. B, I'm sorry to say this, but the truth of the matter is, you know, even in Western Europe, 600 years ago, it was herbalists who were curing everyone, and they were females. And then they were attacked by the Roman Catholic Church because of the power that they had to bring life into the world and to save life, and they were burned as witches. And then the Roman Catholic Church became, of course, the controller of the body. And at the same time, it was handed off to men. And the first surgeons in Western Europe were barbers.
Oh, God. Well, it's true. And by the time we start coming up with the term hysterectomy, which was all about a hysterical woman, and so you take all of her internal organs out to hopefully make her more like a man so she won't be hysterical, that there was that. There's also in the 18th century, they knew that women had, a prostate, and they knew that women female ejaculated. Mm-hmm. In the 1900s, when women were working really hard to try to get the vote, and actually would be like the late 1800s up into the 1900s, we suddenly lost a piece of anatomy. So that they weren't even sure women could have orgasms. But they definitely knew that they didn't ejaculate, they didn't have a prostate. It's amazing how the female body has just gone through all kinds of incarnations based upon politics and the gender war.
Yes, it's quite unfortunate. It's quite unfortunate because it's been to a great disservice to the entire world, the disempowerment of the female, as you well know.
Annie, a great interview. It's just whizzed by. We've only got about 5 minutes here. I want to make sure that people know not only how to get your book, but what's in it for them. So first, our listeners who maybe don't have cancer right now or hoping, that they're never going to have cancer or maybe nobody in their family is, can you give them some idea what they might get from reading your book?
Well, I think they'll get they'll basically get how to approach their life in a very healthy and whole way, and they'll get it from the physical, emotional, as well as spiritual level, and they'll also get a great story of deep, incredible journey and soul evolution. And so far, almost every reader who has read the book that writes to me and lets me know, they tell me of how they're transformed by the book. And many have never encountered cancer, have no one in their family who's encountered cancer. Many are men. I mean, it's quite amazing. It's in fact, I'm astounded at the response because as Lance Armstrong would say, it's not about the bike. Well, the book is not about cancer. It is really truly about well-being. And how to be well, and how to truly be your most authentic and your most loving self in the world. Because that's when you're your happiest, and when you are your very happiest and your most authentic, that's when you're your healthiest. And that's when you're a great pleasure to be around for everyone as well. So I think that, and there's also some fantastic, detoxification tips, and as well as just general great living advice. But it is a chronicle of my journey, and it is a bit of a memoir. So, it's been called the Eat, Pray, Love meets Michael Moore. I don't know what else to say. It's a kind of interesting compliment. And
let's tell them where the website is here, because I want to make sure they know it's at pelicanscoconutsandbutterflies.com. PelicansCoconutsandButterflies.com.
And the book is also available worldwide, as well as on Amazon and Barnes & Noble on the Internet.
Yeah. Well, you've been a delight, absolute delight. I really enjoyed having you on the show tonight. And I'll leave you with this thought. Nicholas posted on Facebook, he says, "Your guest is making me feel better about not having health insurance."
Oh, God is blessed. Well, if everyone simply empowers themselves and really, really requests non-invasive treatment and diagnostics, we'll get there. But every single person has to do it.
Yeah.
Fear or no fear.
We have to switch. We have to switch the paradigm. Annie, you are an inspiration. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'm going to let you hopefully get some sleep.
I shall.
All right. And for my listeners, I'm back now. I'm back from the Oregon tour, so I'm going to be around for probably a couple of months, which I'm very much looking forward to connecting with you on Skype and over the telephone. And then, of course, if you happen to be in the Nevada City area, I just want to remind you that I've got an office called the Shame-Free Zone. It's in the Miners Village, and it is by appointment only. But I'm usually there on Wednesdays and Fridays, and I would welcome connecting with you, whether you're a man, a woman, or a couple. I do quite a bit of role-playing in my office, and it's turning out to be a really effective teaching tool. So if you want to know more about that, you can email me at veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. And, of course, you're always welcome to call my toll-free number, which is 888-903-0050. That's it for tonight. I will see you back here next Monday.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?